there's a race on to get rapid coronavirus tests ready to go.
The goal is to expand and get sort of those approved in the coming months.
But how realistic is that? Plus, plane makers are studying how to curb the risk of the virus spreading on flights.
It's going to be difficult to get people comfortable flying again, given the experience that we're all going through.
It's Tuesday, May 26th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. It was back to the office for traders at the New York Stock Exchange this morning. That's the opening bell ringing for the first time since March 23rd. But the reopening was a bit muted. Just a quarter of the usual number of traders were back on the floor. And they're following new guidelines. They'll have to wear masks, be separated by plexiglass barriers, and they're being asked to avoid taking public transportation. U.S. stocks did well today, with investors optimistic as the nation reopens. The Dow jumped 530 points, or 2.2%. The S&P 500 rose 1.2%, and the NASDAQ added 0.2%. The Minneapolis Police Department has fired four officers after a black man died last night after being taken into police custody. Federal and state officials have launched an investigation into the incident. A Facebook video of the encounter shows a white officer kneeling on the man's neck and the man telling officers that he can't breathe. The video has been shared by more than 10,000 people as of Tuesday. Big drug maker Merck says it's joining rivals in the race to find a vaccine for the coronavirus. After looking within its own stocks for possible candidates, Merck says it's now acquiring an experimental vaccine as part of its purchase of an Austrian drug maker. And it's partnering on another one with a scientific research organization based in New York. Globally, there are now 150 vaccines already in development. And the new mobile-first streaming platform Quibi is beginning to feel the pinch from its lackluster launch. Some of its major advertisers are asking to defer payments because of concerns with the service's low viewership. Those include PepsiCo, Taco Bell, Anheuser-Busch, and Walmart. Quibi was founded by Hollywood mogul Jeffrey Katzenberg. It struck ad deals valued at $150 million in the run-up to its launch on April 6th in the middle of the pandemic. Coming up after the break, how plane makers Boeing and Airbus are studying the coronavirus. The coronavirus pandemic is reshaping the airline industry. For the past few months, lockdowns and travel restrictions have brought air travel to a near standstill. Now, as the nation reopens, the industry is working hard to make passengers feel safe to fly again. Plane makers Boeing and Airbus have started studying the virus and how it spreads in aircraft. Wall Street Journal reporter Andrew Tangle joins me now with more details. So, Andrew, tell us a little bit more. What exactly are Airbus and Boeing studying regarding the coronavirus and air travel?
Both of those plane makers are starting to look at how the coronavirus behaves inside an aircraft. They're trying to understand the risks, any unknown risks, and figure out a way to further combat it in the air. Both talk about their air filtration systems that they have on board and have touted the quality of the air that's brought in. It's changed over frequently, it's brought in fresh from the outside, and then some of it is filtered through powerful filters that you might see similar kinds of in a hospital setting, so forth. But they're looking to see how this particular virus behaves on airplanes in the air and on surfaces, and they're overall trying to get a better handle on how to keep it from spreading.
Andrew, what do we know so far about how this virus spreads on airplanes?
The CDC right now says that the primary mode of transmission is via droplets excreted through coughing, sneezing, or talking within close range of about 6 feet between people. They recently provided guidance saying that transmission through surfaces is believed to be possible, but not necessarily a primary mode of transmission. It's unclear, though, to what extent there could be so-called airborne transmission if the virus can linger in the air for some amount of time or drift beyond the immediate area from which somebody coughed or sneezed. That is an open question, and more research into that and other questions about this virus will help airlines better understand the risks.
The pandemic has really taken a huge toll on the industry. Andrew, what's your sense of what else the industry will need to do to get back to normal or our new normal?
It's going to be difficult to get people comfortable flying again, given the experience that we're all going through. And I think airlines are going to be looking at the pandemic, how it plays out, infection rates. Testing will play a big role in sort of knowing who has the virus and who doesn't, and giving people confidence that they are able to fly, giving airlines confidence that they're putting passengers on board without live virus in them so they're not spreading it. And then passengers have to be assured that they are reasonably protected if somehow the virus got onto the aircraft. It's a big problem and it's a big challenge.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Andrew Tangle. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
The lack of widespread testing and the questionable reliability of coronavirus tests has been a huge issue during the pandemic. Now there are more tests available, but they still require lab equipment and take hours or even days to show results. And that's not fast enough if you want to test workers or school kids as they walk in the door. So hundreds of teams across the country are racing to develop rapid tests and hoping they'll be available as early as this fall. Joining me now to talk more about the challenges is Wall Street Journal reporter Brianna Abbott. So Brianna, can you describe the race to create rapid testing? Where do we stand right now?
There are a lot of different diagnostic companies working on a rapid test for COVID-19. So essentially a test that could be deployed in doctor's offices or healthcare clinics or even at home, like an at-home pregnancy test, so that all of the testing doesn't necessarily require shipping a sample to a lab, all of the extra equipment. And we're sort of in the beginning of that. There are a few tests that can be deployed in doctor's offices that are already approved, but I think the goal is to expand and get sort of those approved in the coming months.
What can you tell us about our current testing? How does that work?
Most of the testing in the U.S. is centralized. So we use this test called a polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, and that's sort of considered the gold standard for diagnostic testing. So like I said, you collect a sample either with one of those swabs that poke the back of your nose, or they're starting to do less invasive collection, ships off to a lab. It runs in sort of these pretty decent sized instruments. They can run a decent number of samples at once, and then it gets shipped back. And those tests are really sensitive and reliable, but as you can imagine, it takes a little while to process. And especially one of the issues with that is, you know, if you want to, you're in a healthcare setting or you're even at home, you want to be able to figure out the results quickly. Especially if you're in a medical triage situation, you need to figure out if the person has COVID or if they have the flu. Like, you're going to want a test that gives you results in 5 to 10 minutes instead of 5 to 10 hours.
What are the biggest challenges right now to developing rapid testing?
So some of the challenges sort of include just developing the test, which takes a bit longer than developing a PCR test. And, you know, another challenge is finding non-invasive ways to collect the patient sample while maintaining sensitivity, because you can't really have a collection test that uses those long swabs, because you can't really do that without a medically trained professional. So that's a challenge. And another one is just sort of scale, because there are a lot of companies with a lot of great ideas, but, you know, from getting from the prototype to producing millions of tests, that's sort of a logistical hurdle that you need to get through as well. So all of those are sort of challenges right now.
So this has been described as something like Shark Tank, where different teams are competing for federal funding. Can you explain that?
Yes. There was a Senate hearing on May 7th that actually used the term Shark Tank for COVID-19 testing as the title of the of the Senate hearing. So it's definitely sort of a way that people like to think of this challenge that was started at the National Institutes of Health. And sort of what they're doing is they want companies to submit, you know, their prototype ideas. So it's not just an idea on paper. They sort of might have a prototype already or have something in a lab that's a quick either point of care or rapid test. And sort of what they're going to do is they're going to pick the best ones and provide them with funds as well as technical, business, and manufacturing expertise so that they can go from those good ideas to manufacturing like at a high scale. And the goal is to get millions of tests per week by the end of the summer and even more by flu season.
So how costly would something like this be? You mentioned earlier pregnancy tests. Those aren't exactly inexpensive, especially if you're going to be scaling testing up where this is done multiple times.
Right. So the goal with this is to also make the testing cheap because, you know, you have to be able to have, if the point is decentralizing, it needs to be at a place where people can afford to buy it. And so I think the goal, some of the antigen tests, which sort of look for viral proteins, I think they're hoping that they can be around like a cheap $10 test that you can buy. But I think it's too early to say for a lot of these tests just because they're still in the development phase and not necessarily at a place where they're ready to hit the market.
You mentioned a couple of different segments of the population where this could be used. What is the target audience or target consumer here?
So target audience ranges from, you know, employers to hospitals to you and me, and it sort of depends how we want to use them. Though I will say that they're a lot better for quick situations where there isn't necessarily a lab nearby and you sort of need immediate results. But if you're an employer that's trying to screen thousands of employees, this might not be the best case only because they can only run one or a handful of samples at a time, whereas the tests that we're using now can run, they have a lot higher throughput and can test many more samples at once. So it really depends on if you want speed or if you want bulk in testing.
You know, Brianna, even with the testing we have right now, we do hear different reports about the effectiveness of one test over the other, for example. I'm assuming that's going to be a big challenge for rapid testing as well.
Sure. And so with rapid testing, it's sort of a rule of thumb in the diagnostics industry that if the test is quicker and sort of easier to use, it's likely going to be less sensitive than sort of the lab-based tests. And so that's something that diagnostic industry and sort of health employees are sort of planning for, that there's this trade-off sort of between speed and sensitivity, though that's not necessarily the worst thing if, you know the sensitivity of the test and you know the error rate and you can sort of deploy it with the right strategy, can sort of make up for that. And some technologies like CRISPR, which is sort of the gene editing technology that some groups are looking at, might be able to sort of bridge this gap between speed and sensitivity, but that is definitely a major challenge with rapid testing.
And what about the fall timeline to turn something like this over? That seems like a big challenge in and of itself.
It definitely is. Dr. Francis Collins, who's the head of the NIH, at a May 7th Senate hearing, said that the proposed target was a stretch goal that sort of goes beyond what most experts think will be possible. Though I have also talked to a few other sources, including one of the people who's spearheading the testing initiative, that it can be done and that the challenges are daunting. But overall, you know, people are optimistic.
Wall Street Journal reporter Brianna Abbott. Brianna, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.